I'm here in the county hall in Talla, and I'm talking to Therese Ridge. Clondalkin is where you are now. But where did life start for you?
Like a lot of true Dubliners, I was born between the two canals. I was born in Hollis Street Hospital, National Maternity Hospital.
And what was your father doing?
My father was a butcher. And my mother, who was a full-time mammy, had been a bookkeeper, and they worked in adjacent buildings in Chatham Street, and probably fell in love and got married. My father was from, at the time of his marriage, he was living in Sandymount, and my mother lived in Rathmines.
Mm-hmm. And when you say your mother was a bookkeeper for...
A very unusual shop. It was a delicatessen, but it wasn't called that. But it was just off Grafton Street, and it catered to a wealthy clientele. There was wonderful stories about in older times that Maud Gone McBride and her friend Madame Despard used to shop there, but the locals called them Gone Mad and Madame Desperate. But my mother was the bookkeeper for that shop.
Very interesting, yeah. So you as a child, you were in and out? And
I was in every Saturday. It was wonderful because she had a very, very good friend, a lady who was so deeply religious and actually lived in a flat over the shop, but still worked in it. And she wore what you never see nowadays, a beautiful, crisp sort of coat, shop coat, but it was flowery and it wasn't a crossover. It was very, very suited to the type of shop, if you know what I mean. And of course, she always had a treat for us when we went in on Saturday, because my mother would go into town on Saturdays to do the main shopping, and then she'd go out every day to the local shops for what we needed for the day. But Saturday was a big day because you always got a little present on her return. After we visited Whitefriar Street Church, then we went to Chatham Street, and then we did our bits and pieces, and we came home.
But the church came first?
Visit and to light a candle. My mother had a sister who was a Poor Clare nun in an enclosed order in Carlow, and we were all very conscious of going to church and that sort of thing. But I loved going into Whitefriar Street because it had loads of statues and banks of candles, and it was sort of a very different church. It was a backwards. The church was actually back to front, if you know what I mean. It's hard to describe, but it was always pleasant. It was lovely to go in.
Yeah. But the whole atmosphere here in Dublin, inner Dublin in those days, a lot different to today. The way people used to shop, and shopping was just for one day and on a Saturday. And
shops closed on a Sunday, except the local corner shop. You wouldn't get anything open on a Sunday. The nice thing about Dublin in those days, if you were in town, even in my teens and when I was a young woman, there was no such thing as shutters. The shops were just left and nobody ever touched them. There was no question of anyone throwing a rock or a... I mean, you could walk the length of O'Connell Street and window shop at 3 o'clock in the morning if you were coming from a date dance.
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
Do you remember Nelson's Pillar?
I do. I remember him being blown up as well. And I remember Ronnie Drew had a song about it. Up went Nelson and the Pillar too, I think it was called. 1966.
That's right. And, you know, these are memories of Dublin, as Dublin was. You know, you grew up, you went to school where was school?
Just to fill you in, I always feel that I am a total Dub, but I presume and know that I must have rural ancestors. But my immediate, mother and father, my father, when he was a boy, he lived in East Essex Street. We found that out actually on the new census that came out. And he was described at the time as a scholar. That meant he was actually going to school. So my paternal side was based literally practically beside the Liffey, and my mother's family lived in Atmines. But as my father, when my father was a young man, he moved into a, what you'd call nowadays an apartment, out of which he married then. But when I was a child, my grandmother lived in Fishamble Street with an aunt. And I still remember Wood Quay and the small road that divided. There were two roads, a little narrow one and then the wide one that was the quay. And I also remember everywhere was cobbled, and it was a crazy street because all the stairs in my grandmother's house were all different heights. It was very, very old, just to shake when there was a storm. But it was, it was ancient, you know. But you didn't think anything of that. That was, and lots of people lived in houses as old as that.
Yeah, but from that area, the lot of the buildings were derelict, and you know, they were kind of, it was rough looking. Did that strike
well? It
you
was. There were very few actual houses left in it that people lived in. There was a few. Maybe engineering firms and small people working. I don't mean small people, small businesses. There was a bookshop opposite. I always remember that. And they had a sort of a corner shop facing them. And then you could go up the back of Essex Street at the back of Michael and John's Church, which was still open and worked as a church in those days. It's been closed for a long time. It was called Mickey's and Jack's, Michael's and John's. You know, everything gets a nickname. And when I was, if I didn't go to my grandmother in Rathmines, I went to my grandmother in Fishamble Street, because on alternate, because I had four sisters and two brothers, so we all kind of went to visit grannies.
But that's the area that you would have known as a child, as a young girl growing up, is it?
I knew that very well. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Did you know?
I lived in Drimna.
In Drimna, but yeah. You would have kind of travelled on.
Oh, the 23 bus, you see, brought you directly down to grannies.
Yeah.
So, and my Aunt Henrietta, born in the Edwardian era, was a wonderful lady, and she had great sense of humour, but she always brought you out. The whole purpose when you were a child in Dublin was to have aunts, uncles or grandparents that would slip you the odd sixpence, or because your own parents would be, you'd be on a once a week treat because of large families and one wage coming in and that sort of thing. So you loved going to grannies and maiden aunts in particular were great. So, but my Aunt Hen had a great knowledge. She was very, and she used to talk to you always as though you were an adult. You were out with her as her companion. You know, she wasn't minding you in any way. So she used to tell me all about the buildings around, and we used to maybe go to up Essex Street. That would bring you into Parliament Street, and that would be the back of Michael and John's Church, and we'd go down by the back of the Olympia Theatre and up the lanes there, and she would walk up then to George's Street, because halfway up George's Street there were, I think it was the Home and Colonial stores, it was, or could have been Lipton's, because they were two sort of very good grocery and butcher shops, but they were kind of elegant, and you would go and get your meat for Sunday there.
Yeah,
with her, I would go, and then of course on the way back you always got your comic or your chocolate or whatever, you know.
Oh, where were you educated?
A very interesting school, Golden Bridge, in Inchicore.
And tell me about that.
I was. We all went there. It was Clutter na Trócaire. I always remember that, reading it on the copybooks. The Convent of Mercy in Inchicore was a huge national school for an area that covered Inchicore, but they took the odd refugee from Drimna. My mother sent us to it because it had a very good reputation for getting you to learn. And
it was the Mercy Sisters.
The Mercy Sisters. Now, it's where the famous Golden Bridge orphanage was, but it was quite an amazing place. It must have been a big estate, or where the convent was built, probably well in the, maybe about 1880 or something. But there was big fields and there was cattle. I don't know whether you say cattle or not, not being from the country, but there was cows, as the kids would say, in the fields. Lovely sort of meadows and white railings. And there was hens and I think even turkeys kept as well. It was, the school was spread out. When you're in the junior school, like, you could be literally in a building. It's very hard to describe, but it could start, say, here at the front of the council gate, and then maybe you'd go up as far as nearly to the end of the road for some other parts, you know. And then there was a small boys' school, which was a feeder school for the Christian Brothers in Inchicore. And huge classes. I always remember there were 64 in my class. I remember that particularly well. I don't know why. But and I got a wonderful education from mostly wonderful teachers, both nuns and lay teachers. And then we were very lucky, really. And I feel very sorry for an awful lot of the religious who have been sort of all lumped together as brutal and what have you, because the nuns that where I went to school provided a free secondary top, and I would not have been able to complete my second level education without this. They provided a completely free, well, there was a small subscription. Or was there? Maybe there wasn't even. I'm possibly thinking of the price of the books. But I got a superb, right through to Leaving Cert, education for absolutely nothing.
And were you happy in going to school? You know,
oh, yeah.
You got through your schooling days fairly well.
Yeah, I had, my mother and father were very bright people, I think. Yeah. I when I say that, there was, my father was always reading. Well, there was no telly. No, but he wouldn't have been interested anyway. He used to sit at night when his seven beautiful children would be in bed, and I think he used to have about 2 hours of reading and peace. And my mother was exceedingly friendly and gregarious lady and very bright. So yeah, we had a very good home base. But now, not for space. You could be doing your home exercise while somebody else was eating their dinner at the end of the table, you know.
Where did you, when you were going, when you finished school, did you know what you were
going to do? I was very sort of disappointed at the beginning, because I had gone to school at the age of 4, and our secondary top was a 4-year cycle in those days. So I had completed my Leaving Cert at the age of 16 and 3 months.
Oh, you were very young.
I know. And I had wanted to be a teacher, and I was too young to be allowed to sit the Easter orals to do national teaching. Now, those days, as you possibly remember, being perhaps maybe not too distant in age from me, I don't know, but there was no such thing as a repeat Leaving Cert. It was unheard of. No, it was never suggested. It was never thought of. It was in the cruel days. If you failed Irish, you failed your whole Leaving Cert. What a country. But however, I was very lucky. I had done physiology. I wonder, is it ever on a school
curriculum
syllabus? Yeah. And botany. And I subsequently got what was known as a great job. And it was a great job. I got a job in the railway works in Inchicore in the laboratory as a laboratory assistant. And I had the great pleasure and privilege of having, you became a member of staff. And because of that, I got a free bus pass all around Dublin. And then I subsequently was able to travel by rail all over Europe for nothing. And in those days, British Rail ran the boats, So we used to have first class on British Rail because we worked for the railway company. Well, the same privilege was granted to people who worked on the continent who were coming to Ireland. So I was very lucky to, I got to see a lot of Europe while I was very young.
In the 1960s then, you were set up and you had a job and you were married as well, like you.
Well, that 26, but I must say I really believe I had a very good, happy life. I loved dancing and people actually knew how to dance, including myself. Rock and roll, I was adored it. And I really truly feel sorry for young people nowadays. The sheer physical exhilaration of getting a good jive, as they used to say, a good jiver to dance with. People used to be high in the very best sense, didn't need any stimulants at all other than the being able to really do a cool jiving dance. And I know knew there was gracefulness in it, and also you actually could see people. You could see the person you were dancing with, and you could also hear them during the slower dances. And I feel so sorry for the kids nowadays in that regard, but however.
Where did you socialize in Dublin? Where did
Oh, well, I had a group of very good friends. And also, I think where I worked was quite, it was extremely interesting because it was like a separate town. It's huge, the railway works in Inchicore. It's miles long and wide because it's where they used to build the trains. And while they were importing an awful lot of, they still had depots and buildings and paint shops and diesel one and diesel two shops. And because of my work, I got around the works quite a lot because I used to do some of the oil testing and the paint testing with regard to the durability of how long the paint would
Was
last and
this
all of
your
that sort.
brief? It was this your
Yeah,
brief?
yeah, yeah.
Testing
Testing the oil,
the
the
oil
viscosity of
system.
the oil that would be taken out of the diesel engines to check that they were not in need of anything in particular. That was kind of a routine thing, it was quite boring. Then we used to do maybe ash content and do paint and
Of
do.
course, it was steam in those
Yeah,
days.
well, no, there was some steam, but this was for the diesel. We
Oh,
were
the
doing
diesel,
the diesel trains. So that was my work really, and I enjoyed it very much.
And we were talking about your social life.
My social life was
So.
great from the point of view. Well, A, I had the chance to travel quite a lot, and B, I had very good friends, and they all lived relatively near me. I played badminton as well, which I enjoyed,
You said
and
the Inchicore railway
works.
was huge works, and so you would have socialized with a lot of the rail that the people working
Yeah,
on the
well,
rail.
because they're
And is
really.
that where you met your husband?
It sort of. It sounds strange. I did. He had gone to school in Synge Street, and he was awaiting joining the Garda Síochána, hopefully, and he got a temporary job as I still laugh when I think about it. He was in charge of the iron store as a clerk. He said he was the boss, but there was nobody under him. It's just, and he would have been a clerk in CIE, and but I met him at a dance, and then I didn't know that he worked there, but he knew that I worked there, so we kind of just had chatted and all that sort of thing.
What's your husband's name? Your husband,
James.
James. James went on to be a guard afterwards, did he?
He did, and then subsequently to become a criminal lawyer. So we've great fun in our house. We don't know. Sometimes we hear the guard speaking, and sometimes we hear the lawyer speaking. You know, he speaks with forked tongue.
And where James started was really with the ironworks inside in
Yeah,
with the
yeah.
rails of the tra you know isn't that what you're talking
Yeah,
about
he
the
was in
rails?
charge of, I presume, issuing anything that came out, and I don't really know because it was very short time because he was called into the depot in 1962. So
Now, where did your life take you to then? You weren't in working in the laboratory of the Enchicore for very long.
I was there for 6 years.
Did you spend 6 years
there? Yeah, because remember, I left school at 16.
Okay, but you were still a very young girl.
I married when in May, and I had been 26 in March. And then I had my first daughter the following year, 1968. And then I had my son in 1970. And then I had my younger daughter in 1973.
And
I have three children, and they're happy and well and getting quite old.
And as soon as you started a family, you came out of work.
I didn't have an option. I was
in those days. You didn't have an option.
I had no option. I was very, and you know, it sounds strange. One fought against it, but at the same time, the golden egg was the fact that you received back your superannuation contributions with an amount, and in our case, people would find it very hard to believe. I got almost £1,000 back after 6 years. The house we bought, which was the same house we're living in, a fine, strong house, it cost us £3,650.
You almost had your entire mortgage paid for, so.
Well, no, we had the full deposit, and it meant that we could buy some furniture, and it was, if you like, it was my money, but it was our money because I had to stop work. So my husband was then supporting me.
He was
me.
The breadwinner from there on.
And I think his wages at the time were £21 a week, out of which we paid a mortgage, furnished a house, and then had two children before I went back into the workforce.
As?
I went in as a substitute teacher. In those days, you could go in, I think maybe you still can, if you had an honours leaving cert, you could go in. And I went in to help out a friend of mine who was sick. Then I got interested and I did a Montessori diploma. Strangely enough, was terribly interesting, with two very old ladies used to come from England, and they were the original students of Madame Montessori. They were so ancient, but they had their principles exactly down to the last. But the course was held in Dublin, but these ladies came over when we had to submit our handwork and all of our exams to them. So I then ran a community nursery in Ballyvermot, and after that I got really wanted to go to college, because I always felt that I had not done what I'd wanted to do when I was 16. And I met a wonderful gentleman, and I'm sorry, he's dead now, about 4 years maybe, Professor Liam Carey, who was in charge of the adult education department in Maynooth. And I had applied to UCD to do a BA. I had applied to UCD to just do the ordinary BA, and it'll just show you, this was about 1978, and they wouldn't take you, even though I had exactly the right things to go to college, and I had maths and a good honours leaving and all of that sort of thing. But that was the rule at the time, and I was truly and truly really annoyed. But in fairness, I think somebody in UCD told me I should write to or apply to Maynooth. And I did, and to my great astonishment, this very nice gentleman actually called to my home and said he would take me, because I had my Montessori diploma, he would take me into his 1 year postgrad adult and community education course, which was full time. Wednesdays off to gather yourself together every other day, full time. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed it, and I got a distinction. And then I went, when was that? That was 80s. And then I went to work in Stuart's Hospital with young adults who had learning difficulties, in a most amazing and wonderful place, Mill Lane Training Centre. I did basic, the education bit, and I also got sex education because I was the only one who was married at the time for the girls. They were from 16 till their maybe mid-20s. And then we had a printing press, we had a cookery department, and we had an arts and crafts. But I did the actual formal teaching bit, if you like. But we also did life skills. So I won't keep you forever, but I have had the most hilarious and wonderful experiences with my students when we would go out into what we call the real world. I often wonder what that is. So after that,
that must have been very rewarding kind of work, you know, that you could see. Did you find that you were making an impact, that, you know, you were?
I felt that we could learn sometimes an awful lot. Yeah. They had so much the right attitude in many ways. They knew exactly what another not to bother with, and they knew exactly what you should bother with to a great extent. I enjoyed it. And the only reason I left, I didn't know that I wanted to stay there, even though I as you can imagine, I had moved from an awful lot of different areas of work, if you like. But I was asked would I run in the local elections in 1985.
Why were you put in that position?
Well, I'd always voted Fine Gael from family tradition. My father had actually been in Michael Collins's army. Now, I don't think he was an active participant. We'll call it the First National Army. And because he would have been a bit young. He was born in 1903. But my mother's family would have been typically Dublin, in as much as her father had been in the British Army during the First World War. So we would have been come from a very pro-treaty background, and as most of the Dublin people did at the time. So I joined Fine Gael, not consciously, but because very good neighbour knew I voted that way, and so did my husband. And he said, you can join the branch. And I think it was 10 shillings. So I decided for 10 shillings a year. So we went to meetings, and sometimes they were interesting, sometimes they weren't. But generally speaking, I enjoyed them because there was quite a lot of people of either my own age, some younger and some older, and it was interesting. But in 1985, anyway, the county council became enlarged from 28 to 39 or something like that. And there was nobody running for Fine Gael that was remotely near Clondalkin. And to my amazement, I was asked to run, and I still remember my response was, I would die if I saw my name on a poster. And then in latter years, I was just thinking, I'd die if I didn't see it on a poster. But I'm an accidental politician.
Are you? Yes. And, you know, go back to the early days when you first joined the, you know, when you first decided to take that step and go into politics. Mm. Had you any idea of how difficult this was going to be? I mean, you had to, I suppose you had to get out there and canvass and
well, I
work
think
towards
I had
elected.
Been involved in a small committee for the old folks. Sounds terrible, doesn't it? The old folks. I don't mean it like that, of course. They were lovely, wonderful people. I think I was a bit of a joiner. You know, I was on the Residents Association. I never wanted anything that involved work. But I did want to keep in touch with people, and older people and young people and what have you. And in the long run, actually, deciding that I would throw my hat in the ring was quite hilarious, because I got a lot of pressure from these young women who were wonderful to me. They were young married women, and they helped me so much. They got me elected. I didn't at all. But anyhow, I remember they kept saying, you'll do it, you'll do it. And I was saying, no, I will not. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. And I remember coming home one evening and saying to my current spouse, as I call him, because he's still on trial after 40 years. But anyway, I said, what am I going to do? I'd die I'd never be able for it. I'd never be able for it. And his answer, it was the reason I'm in politics, the real reason. He says, my dear, your legs we give out before your neck.
In other words, you needed a good, strong neck too.
And I think he was right, because I don't feel ill at ease at all. Now, in the beginning, I did feel apprehensive, but I feel when you get to my stage in life and with my experience, I've always reckoned that my opinion is as good and as strong as anybody else's. And I wouldn't force it down anyone's neck, but I believe life experience gives you a right to maybe offer some guidelines on occasions.
Yeah. Now, you know, in the meantime, this is the 1980s now, you were elected in
1985,
as a councillor.
Yep.
In Clondalkin, in South Dublin.
Yeah, area. No, it was the old Dublin County Council.
So it was Clondalkin.
Clondalkin and Newcastle, still is fairly rural, yeah.
Yeah, and your husband, was he a guard at this stage? Or
he was still in the guards at that stage.
In the guards at that stage. And where was he stationed?
Various places. He did a stint on the border when he became a sergeant, as usual, that ridiculous thing they used to do. And then he was in Store Street, he was in Fitzgibbon Street and Harcourt Terrace, and he eventually ended up as a tutor in the detective training school in the depot before he left.
Mm-hmm. And his time in the Guards before we go back into your life, that must have been interesting. Did you discuss
I actually remember the day poor Garda Fallon was shot, because such an outrage had not happened for maybe 30 years. And unfortunately, then it became almost a once a year ritual, as you know, with, I presume, the people who call themselves Republicans, but I've never had any time for them at all. But however, I always remember that, and life was much easier. My goodness, there was I could let my children out. This is what I resent on behalf of all parents nowadays. I lived in a quiet cul-de-sac, and I truthfully could say from the age about four, once there was an older one with them, you could let your kids out for maybe, you'd keep an eye out, of course, but you never ever thought that A, anyone would ever speak to them who shouldn't, or B, that, well, the car, like if you had one second-hand car in every house, you were doing well. Now we all have two or three or whatever, you know. So lifestyle has changed very much. I'm delighted about all the jobs, but I hate the disintegration of neighbourliness caused by cars, and also the fear of traffic. And kids don't have as good a time.
Mm-hmm.
We could, and you could run in the playground. Imagine, you can't run in the playground anymore in school because of the insurance.
I know.
Pathetic.
When your husband left to become a tutor.
No, he stayed in the guards
as
a tutor.
As a tutor, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he went on to be.
Yeah, he had He had studied for the bar some years, and he had been called to the bar. But because we had three children, he stayed in the police, because I would have to praise the Garda Síochána very much from the point of view of look after you very well from the point of view of health insurance and lots of things like that. And every Thursday the money came in, and we needed that while our children were studying. So he actually finished at 50 and went down then to Devil in the forecourt. And he does criminal law generally, because that's what he was familiar with.
Well, of
from
course,
the other
yes,
side.
But nothing ever happened during his time in the guards. Nothing.
He was never threatened or anything. Oh, I'm sure he was, but he was a very big, what would I say?
Able man.
Hmm? Yeah, and it was a different age. Obviously people either feared or respected them an awful lot more than they do now. And I think it's very sad to see. I do believe that society is worse off, or much wealthier in with regard to money and access to education and holidays and not houses, no. But the quality of life has definitely diminished greatly.
But Teresa, now at this stage in your life, you were, this is the 1980s, you were now a county councillor, you were bringing all the experience of your
background
with you in working with young people and old people, and this must have been very helpful in administration.
I was reared in Drimna, and you knew a lot of people for starters, because there were large families and people kept. I mean, your house would have been. Maybe only a yard. When you think about it now, the roads are all very narrow. It didn't seem that way at the time. But you got to know an awful lot of people, and there was a lot of... people supported each other greatly. And I think I was... we were very lucky that our parents maybe gave up a lot of things to make sure we got our education. And I think... there were a lot of families did that as well, you know, that. But it was equally common when you think about it nowadays. I would have had a number of friends in national school, and the day they were 14, the next day they would be working in a factory in the general area, like of, say, Cork Street, or some of them got into Jacobs, which was always considered a very good job. Sad to see it going now, indeed, completely. But we were... the lucky ones, even though at the time you thought, oh Lord, they're going to have money and everything like that, you know. So I think we probably had a very normal Dublin childhood for the times that were in it. We weren't starving, certainly not. We certainly didn't have any riches, but we probably had great companions. And I was in the Girl Guides too, and used to go on your hikes, you know. And my mother was great at sort of maybe pointing you to something that you might enjoy, you know, that way. But that's because my mother had been a girl guide in the 1930s. So I don't know. It's all about family in the long run, isn't it?
It is.
What they do for you or what they can't do for you.
What did you do in the council when you came in first? What you did, in fact, was that, I mean, what did you find yourself doing as a county councillor in the beginning?
Well, the beginning was very strange because you might remember the water charges had been dispensed with in a general election gambit. And I went into a county council that had a very low income, and it was a crazy situation. We were lucky to have money to repair small stretches of footpaths, and remember the grant from the department at the time would have been so small, because we were talking about the bad 80s, emigration, terrible, it really was. And I felt very frustrated, actually, that we could do so little. And I often genuinely think, to some people really must think that things just fall out of the sky, you know, and you have to provide the resources if you want to have the return, you know. But at the same time, I found myself sometimes, even if you only shifted something a little bit that helped a group of people, you felt, well, that's good. Or if you got a dreadful neighbour who was absolutely appalling, let's say dealt with, and I certainly mean legitimately, you know, or if you managed to get maybe a row of trees put into someone's little small avenue, that would, because when I started off, there was a dreadful anomaly. Most of the housing in North Llandochan was in the control of Dublin Corporation, even though the people could only elect to the county council. Did you ever hear such a lack of proper representation? And that was 1985, and that did not change until 1994. So they had to vote for us. We had to then get onto the corporation on their behalf. Now, nobody at the corporation was particularly bothered about remote councillors from another authority asking them to come out and do something, you know. Yeah. And we became our own local authority.
Were you very frustrated with that? Were you very kind of...
Well, at the time, North Llandochan was so bereft of everything except people. Houses and people, no facilities. In the beginning, the bus didn't even go up into it, even though the people were living there. They had to take to the roads and protest. I also found myself doing what probably the nuns would have thought was a bit show-offish. I actually did join in sort of a protest walk and that sort of thing. I got bold. And I would often feel now that I don't want to get involved with whingers or moaners, but if people have a very legitimate grievance and that it's a definite grievance, I would always go on their side.
Of course, yeah.
Because I think that's what I'm there for.
Mm-hmm. And did you find yourself in that capacity that you were actually helping people as you went along?
Well, I must have done something because I've been, touch wood, elected 4 times to the County Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the pleasure of being the mayor 2 times. And then I had, at the time I got elected to the Senate, the dual mandate was still okay. So I was able to continue my work as a councillor. And I lost my Senate seat in 2002. And happily, I was still on the county council. It was lucky for me because I think about a year later, they decided that you couldn't be on the two authorities, which are the two in the two establishments, which is fair enough. I actually accept that because
but Teresa, do you find being a councillor back in the 80s, certainly you weren't being paid very much, really?
No.
For your job, a lot of it was voluntary. And
well, going to the meetings at night, a lot of that was, yeah. But I was probably doing that in other spheres for a number of years.
You must have absolutely loved your job, you know, to be away from home, well, to be
I think,
out of meetings
yeah.
later.
Well, I was also very lucky in as much as my husband's job was wonderful for the family because he had still the same 4-shift system. If he was on night duty, he'd be up at about 2 o'clock in the day until 10 at night. And if he was on mornings, he'd be still there from 2 to 10. And if he was on lates, well, he was going in at 2, but he'd be home at 10. So I was blessed. I was never stuck for a babysitter. I think that contact with the children when they were small gave them a very strong bond with their father, which a lot of men can't have anymore.
But do you think being a counsellor was was sometimes a thankless job?
Totally. But I have a very thick skin. I know, and people say a lot of things in the heat of the moment. They don't really mean it. But I wouldn't be too slow to defend myself either. You see, I'm a Dubliner. I know what people are saying when they're saying it, if you know what I mean.
But would you think, you know, I'd like to put this in a way that, do you think county councillors generally, you know, do a very important job?
Yes, but unfortunately, our funding being dependent on the, to a great extent, on the commercial rate, and also the grant support from the Department of the Environment, were very much not our own masters with regard to what we'd really like to do. And I think I'm very lucky. I'm on a very innovative council here. We've got, as you possibly have noticed, it's anything that can be done is being done. But I just feel that some of
but
the
what
things...
But what is the driving force there?
In this council?
Yes, to get this done.
I don't know.
Is it teamwork? Is it
no,
personalities? How to get money from the government? Is it, you know, how is it done?
I think, well, from my experience, if I need something done in the council, if the budget allows for it, I would personally go to the highest part. Well, I probably wouldn't go to the manager. unless it was something absolutely amazing. But I find if you address the issue that you're concerned with in a positive way, and you've got to have a great memory, because people say, yeah, we'll do that, and then you find out it doesn't happen. You also have to have I think what you really have to have is you have to have a great pair of legs, I mean, for walking, if you're canvassing and that sort of thing. Good pair of feet. You have to have a hard neck, but you have to have a soft heart too. And I think in the long run, you have to be prepared to be possibly rejected by the people, not because they don't like you, but maybe somebody else is singing a better song, and they're hearing a new tune. I don't know. But by and large, I could only say that my 23 years to date have been mostly joyous, dreadfully annoying, heartbreaking sometimes, but generally speaking, I would not regret it at all. And I feel my experience as a kid growing up in Dublin, in Drimna, in the 50s and 60s, well equipped me to understand people and maybe sometimes to be able to say the right thing at the right time and effect a bit of change.
What were the highs and lows of your life? What was the highest
Do you mean personal or?
personal in, was it reaching the status of Lord Mayor, or
Not at
was
all.
it?
Oh God, I don't know. I've been very lucky. Touch wood again. I've had wonderful experiences. I found myself being invited when I was mayor, and I think to the most amazing places that I never thought I'd even be. Now, I wasn't in the least bit awed by it, but I thought that this is kind of nice, And then I met President McAleese on numerous occasions, because she's exceedingly hardworking. I'm, and she's not of my politics, but I do admire her style with and the way she deals with people. And I was just laughing to myself one day and saying, good God, I think there was ambassadors and I just senior politicians, the president, and because you're the mayor, you're the one, I don't count myself, you're important for 1 year, but I've had wonderful experiences, and I hope to contest the election next year, if the Lord spares me, that sort of thing.
And that would
I
be a
told you nothing
really
about Llandogan in the
that
night
would
from the
be
1960s.
I'm sure that would be make a whole interesting and I'm
Well,
sure
I
it would
could
be lovely.
just it,
Yeah.
it's Llandogan when I arrived, and it was still a rural village. There were two large housing estates coming in on the Monastery Road, and one up at Newlands and Boot Road, and everything else was totally rural. And where I went to live was literally, I had fields outside the back of my house for 7 years with cattle in them. I could hop over and pick blackberries, and we had 7 years, and then the big buildings. But I never moved because I was in this cozy little cul-de-sac, and I can't see any reason to leave it, So I saw Llandogan develop from a rural village to a huge town. And yet we still say the village, and it has things about the village, and she lives in the village. There's still a great draw for that little old main street that doesn't look too good, actually. But
Is there a
one
community
thing,
spirit there,
very
that stems
diffused.
from the past?
Yeah, well, yes. And then they had. David, would you believe they still have an ICA, the Irish Country Women's Association, in there? And I got to know a lot of my friends in Llandogan when I arrived by joining the then ladies' club. And it was wonderful because I met all the young women of my own age from all the different areas, and we all knew each other, and we had hilarious times, like putting on a pantomime and all sorts of different things, quizzes. I think people think these things are trite, but they were amazingly positive for us.
Well, I'm sure there were. You know, there's a whole interesting story behind, I suppose, the difference that women can make in politics, in high places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important to, because having the, like you said, the sensitivity that you have, you know, to, first of all, you need a hard neck, as you said, good legs,
and a soft, big mouth,
and a soft heart, and a soft, yeah. And that's exactly what women generally have. You know?
Yeah, I suppose. Well,
the last was anyway.
We bet the odd one that definitely doesn't meet that description. Yeah. But however.
But Teresa Ridge, thank you very much for telling.
Trasaban Vicon Omara, is that a mouthful or is it not? My late father-in-law was a lovely man from Connemara. And Ridge is, that's the translation,
yeah.
Isn't
it? Yes, it is. And Gormahagut.
August, well, Gunari Antalat, August Gormahagut.